It is Friday once again, so let me say thank you to those of you supporting Into the Word so that we can be on this radio station, also have archives online. Appreciate that very much. God bless you for it. If you are interested in helping in that effort, you can use the contact information at the end of the program today as a place to send your one-time or ongoing gifts of any amount. Fridays, I like to remind everybody, you need to have a home congregation. You need to be actively involved in that home congregation. You should be studying together, praying together, praising together, serving together, and encouraging each other to love and good deeds. That's what churches are all about. That's what local congregations are for. So if you don't have a place, get a place. If you're actively looking right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, our standing invitation is for you to come and check us out. See if maybe we can become your church home. I want you to open your Bible to the book of Proverbs today. We got started on this last time, but I want to totally reintroduce it today so that we've got a good anchor here at the beginning of this fairly long study of the Proverbs. King Solomon is the author of the Proverbs, the vast majority of them. There's some toward the end of the book that are not his. He, I believe, wrote this book sometime around when the temple was being finished and dedicated. And here's my reason why thinking that. We know that his son, Rehoboam, was 41 years old when Solomon died after 40 years of reign and became the new king. So that means that Rehoboam was born the year before King Solomon started his reign as king of the Israelis, the king of Israel. So that means that in the 12th year of Solomon's reign, which was the year that the temple was dedicated in the fall of that year, Rehoboam would have been right around 13. So he is an adolescent. He is maturing into that young adult phase of life. And guess what? The book of Proverbs is targeted for Rehoboam, his younger brothers, and anyone that is still maturing, not just simply in body, but in their mind. So my guess is that the book of Proverbs was first produced in the climactic moments of King Solomon's reign, right around the 11th or the 12th year of his reign, so the late part of the 970s BC, well before things fell apart. So this is the good years of King Solomon when his mind was still pursuing the things of God. All right, we got our background. Let's dive back into the introductory material for the book of Proverbs. Chapter 1, verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. And then here is the reason for this book. To know wisdom and instruction. The distinction of wisdom over information or being smart is that wisdom is the proper application of information. That is what makes the big deal. And proper application from God's standpoint. So if you want to know how to use your smarts, how to use information to understand words of insight, so sort through stuff, to receive instruction in wise dealing, how to do the right thing, again, according to God's way, which was what Solomon prayed for at the very beginning of his kingdom. He said, I'm a young person. He was probably just slightly under the age of 20. The people of Israel are a massive number of people. I don't know how to handle leading them. unless you help me out, God. And so that's how he ended up with wisdom as a gift from God. So, wise dealings. In what? In righteousness, that's doing the right thing by God's standard. Justice, doing the fair thing according to God's standards. And equity, treating people by the same standards appropriately by God's standards again. That's all part of his goal here in writing these things down. To give prudence to the simple. Prudence is the ability to know the right thing that needs to be done and doing it. And so he wants his son, his heir, in particular, Rehoboam, a teenager at this time, to start developing the right mindset for being in a position of leadership where you make choices that impact on people's lives. And all his other sons would need this sort of thing too, because they will have positions in the government. To give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase learning. So if you've already got a wisdom base, by soaking up more wisdom, you broaden your ability to deal with things. The one who understands obtains guidance. So again, you already have some sort of baseline of understanding of how you should do stuff, but this helps you increase that. To understand a proverb. Now, a proverb we typically think of as short, smart, usually pithy, easily memorized saying of wisdom. But it can also be something that has to be unraveled. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. Now, this is interesting. We will eventually get around to the visit of the queen from the south, the queen of Sheba, probably what we call Yemen today. And she, like other peoples of the wider Middle East, came to Solomon to see if they could stump him. And they even made bets. They even had wagers about it. And so it's interesting to me that Solomon included that idea of unraveling riddles. All of that together is the reason why he's writing this. He's got his heir, particularly in mind, the siblings of that heir that will be helping administer the kingdom later. But there's also the broader audience of anyone in Israel, because he publishes this for other people's use, not just simply for his son's use. The book of Proverbs is there to help the people that need wisdom to build up a database of wisdom from which to make choices, which is why people recommend it for training not just simply teenagers or adolescents, but anyone who is lacking wisdom. It was not original to me, and I don't honestly understand where I found it. I don't remember, and I doubt that it was original to them. But I have often recommended that because there are 31 chapters in the book of Proverbs, that a person can simply read the entire chapter that bears the number of the day of the month. Because all months have at least 28, most of them 30, or 31 days in it. And so you can always be repeating your reading of the book of Proverbs on a monthly basis. And from that, you will find Proverbs that you will discover would be useful to your own particular weaknesses or your situations that you have to deal with. And what do? You memorize them. Your word I've hidden in my heart that I might not sin against God. But also, we memorize things to help us be ready at a moment's notice, to offer advice and insight and direction and guidance to other people. So I do urge you, make Proverbs a treasure chest of wisdom for yourself. Use it on a regular basis. Chapter number 1, verse 7 is the theme verse. And this concept gets repeated elsewhere. The fear of he who is. And fear does mean a little bit of knee knocking, a little bit of that heart palpitations, but not in this case. I don't think it's about fear that God is going to punish us, but rather that awesomeness of who God is. He's the creator. He is the one that has no beginning, no end. He's just God. He is the one who is. And that should make us think in a way that feels like fear. So and sometimes we'll see the word respect substituted in our English text. The fear or the respect of he who is the beginning of knowledge. So understanding that God is, and that God is the source of morality. He is the baseline for what is right and wrong. He is the source of wisdom. That's the only way that we're going to find true wisdom and true knowledge. And then in opposition to that, we find the word fool used. Now, a lot of people misunderstand the word fool in biblical context. It is not about being stupid. It is not about being goofy. It is about being resistant to a moral standard outside yourself. David wrote in one of his Psalms, remember, he's dad to the man writing this, "A fool has said in his heart, there is no God." So a fool asserts that there is no one that is the boss of him, that he doesn't have any standards he has to follow, that he can make it up as he goes along, and that even might makes right. If he can bully people around, that's okay. And it's not. That is a biblical fool. And so he writes here, Solomon writes here, fools, that sort of, I'm in charge, I get to make my own rules, I get to push other people around, that sort of person despises wisdom and instruction. Does that surprise you? Doesn't surprise me. I've known a lot of biblical fools in my life. I've been a biblical fool in my life where I didn't want to follow rules, or the people that I ran into didn't want to follow the rules. All they cared about is, I want to do what I want to do. And so let's read it again as kind of an overarching reminder. Verse 7, and let's make it a memory verse. The fear of he who is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So the intimation is, don't be a fool. Fear God and memorize, take to heart a lot of this training material in the book of Proverbs. The next section is interesting because it does kind of double duty. As I said, Solomon is writing for his adolescent son and sons, we'll see the plural used, to help them get ready for life. Life particularly as leaders in the kingdom of Israel. Adolescents have issues with sexuality and temptations along those lines are quite strong. I'm thinking particularly about the young boys because that was my perspective. I was a young boy. And so what Solomon does is he balances these first nine chapters, is what it ends up being, with an extended allegory of foolishness being like a wild woman that wants to get you to be involved in sexual affairs, illicit sexual activity. And Solomon wants to warn his son, his sons, to not get sucked into that. But the bigger thing is that foolishness, moral foolishness, is constantly wanting us to go down that bad route of making bad choices. And you don't want to get sucked into that. Now, wisdom also gets mentioned here. Wisdom is like that good hometown girl that you grew up with that wants what's best. She's the one that you really ought to marry and devote yourself to and be faithful to until death do you part. Well, the allegory is wisdom is like that. She's the one that you really ought to develop a legitimate relationship with and spend the rest of your life with. So that's what we're going to see throughout these first nine chapters, is that idea of both sides. Don't get involved in illicit sexual affairs outside of marriage, and don't let yourself get sucked into foolishness and miss out on God's wisdom. Okay? So with that background, let's dive in. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Forsake not your mother's teaching. For they are a graceful garland on your head and pendants for your neck. So this is the idea of having bodily decoration, particularly for celebratory events, festivals, and family get-togethers for celebration of some special event. It says, that's what the teachings that I and your mother are trying to do here. Now, the mother of Rehoboam was not an Israeli. His mom was Naamah the Ammonite. Now, I can't tell you whether or not she was a believer in the one true God. We know that the Ammonites were unfortunately part of that Lot family group that started worshiping Chemosh and Molech, where they burned up their babies that were part of the offspring from a great big pagan celebration 9 months earlier. It could be during the period of David when Rehoboam was married, during the period of Solomon being the kid that David married off to an Ammonite princess, that she was a believer in the one true God. Don't know. But here, it's certainly a team effort that's being described. Is, look, your mom and I are trying to give you good instruction. Pay attention. wear it like something during a time when you're happy. Verse 10, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. And this is constantly a problem with adolescents, isn't it? It is the peer pressure. It is the desire and temptation to go along with the group. And so Solomon says, don't do it. Verse 11, if they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us, and we'll all have one purse. So this is like a gang mentality here that Solomon is describing. Look, don't go along with those juvenile delinquents that are telling you that you guys can bully, you can gang up and bully a whole bunch of other people and take their stuff. Don't do it, because it's wrong. Verse 15, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. So don't get involved in this might makes right, this bully attitude that some of your peer members are going to be involved in. Instead, think about it. Think where they end up with this attitude. They end up hurting other people in an unfair fashion. And that's not wise. Verse 17, for in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird. Back in this time, one of the ways that you caught birds was that you had a spring net. It was all set up so that you could wait for the birds to come and get some seed or some food, and then you could trigger it. The net would come up out of a bit of camouflage and grab them. Or you could have it a net camouflaged in a flight path and get the birds to kind of panic and fly that direction, and they'd get caught. But both cases, it depended on the birds not seeing the net. What Solomon is saying to his son here is, look, what these guys are up to is pretty obvious. It's like a net that's out in the middle of the sight of the birds. Why would the birds fly into a net like that? Why would the birds go near what is clearly a trap? So he says, these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. See, they are going to get themselves into trouble. Don't be in that pack. Don't be in that group when that happens. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. I am in the habit of telling people, in fact, I was just talking to somebody a few minutes ago, of telling people, if you boil sin and the temptation to sin down to its most basic component, it is greed. It is, I want what I want, and I don't care about anybody else. And so that is what Solomon is warning his son, and by extension, all of those who don't have enough wisdom. Don't let your own selfishness, your foolishness, get you in trouble with the authorities and with God himself. At this point, we meet the heroine of the piece. Wisdom cries aloud in the street, in the markets. She raises her voice. So here's wisdom personified as a young woman, a young unmarried woman, by the way. At the head of the noisy street, she cries out. At the entrance of the city gate, she speaks. So she's out there trying to get the attention of the foolish ones. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? See, how long are you going to go down this path that brings you nothing but bad? If you will turn at my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make my words known to you. See, wisdom is not a top secret thing. God's wisdom wants to be known. Book of James. James clearly was a reader, a student of the book of Proverbs. He mentions that God doesn't withhold wisdom from anybody that asks. Verse 24, because I have called and you refuse to listen, have stretched out my hand and no one's heeded, because you've ignored all my counsel and would have none of my reproof, I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when terror strikes you. This is a sarcastic way of saying, hey, if you blow me off, eventually you'll find out it wasn't a good idea, and I'll say, told you so. When terror strikes you like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call upon me, but I will not answer. They'll seek me diligently, but will not find me. This is the reality. When you are reaping the consequences of really bad, foolish choices, it's too late to try to get wisdom. See, we don't time travel. You're going to end up bearing the consequences of not being wise.